Tonight's study is in Zechariah, the 9th chapter. We're still in Zechariah 9, and I guess we'll go through and try to finish it up. But Zechariah 9, this is study 139 in our study that we'd started quite some time ago, and these verses 1 through 7 that we're going to hopefully basically get through them tonight gives us the understanding of this is deliverance from the enemies that God had promised to those that had come back to the land. And this is literal prophecy for the most part, I think. Of course, tonight's study is, like I said, 139, and today is July the 19th, 2017. And so the whole chapter is not very long, but I pretty well knew that we wouldn't have time to get through it all because we're going to talk to when we get in the 9th verse, it goes to getting a little deeper, and probably that'll stall us down just a little bit. So, go with us to Zechariah chapter 9, verse 1. And it says this, "The burden of the word of the Lord in the land of Hadrach and Damascus shall be the rest thereof, when the eyes of man as of all the tribes of Israel shall be toward the Lord." You know, we've been talking about in the study before this, we were talking about, of course, where they were addressing the remnant that had come back from captivity and all this, and these people that were promised to come back, that the Lord had given the opportunity to come back. They were the old and the young in the Jerusalem area and the Zion area, and God had promised them that it would be somewhat like it was before, other than the problems that they were dealing with their adulterous business there that they were in at the time that he sent them away some 70 years before. And it talks about here the burden of the word of the Lord. And the burden there is, in the Hebrew, is massa. And it means the divine declaration. And that's the burden. And that constitutes here the word of the Lord. And that is to say, the divine direct declaration of the Lord Jehovah God. And so he goes talking about in the land of Hadrach, or a district in Syria. I think we would pronounce it probably Shadrach. Kind of like the one that had been thrown in the furnace in Daniel. It's a district of Syria, Hadrach, and of course Damascus. Damascus is, if you know, is the oldest known city in the world, even to this day, as far as man is concerned. And it is also a city of Syria. And of course, this was the area of Paul's encounter with God back when God struck him down on the Damascus Road. He wasn't that far away from all of these places that we're, a lot of these places that we're going to talk about this very night. So you have the land there is a district in Syria, and then you have Damascus, which is a city. And it is, as we've understood, to be the oldest known city in the world. And it says, it shall be the rest thereof. For the eyes of man, as of all the tribes of Israel, shall be toward the Lord. So the land of rest that he's talking about thereof will be a resting place from the burden or the divine declaration, and the burden will rest there. It will rest upon it. It says, where the eyes of man, and it will be that where mankind's eyes will be looked upon by Jehovah's eyes, as well as all of the tribes of Israel. So, the eyes of man is going to be there to where Jehovah will look and see and understand all of the things of the tribes of Israel as they come into the land and as they come to God's house to worship God. It says, as all of the tribes of Israel, their eyes and their doings shall be toward the Lord. They'll will be seen by Jehovah. There is certainly no doubt, because we've read in other places and other times to where even in your own house, you're not hidden from God. He is the all-seeing, all-knowing Lord of the universe. And it is a folly of man sometimes to think that you can hide and do things that God doesn't know about. But that's just not the case. And, you know, when we go back to some of the scripture that we've read, that where when they were doing this stuff in the temple of the Lord, they didn't think God knew about it and all this idolatrous worship, because they had closed off a part of it that man couldn't go see, but they couldn't close it off to where God couldn't see it. And so, if you remember, he carried Ezekiel up there by the hair of the head and set him down in that place and showed it to him. And not only was God a witness to it, but also Ezekiel was a witness to it also. So, you know, when you think about it and you understand, the all-knowing of God is much greater than man's understanding is, I think, quite often. And it says in verse 2, and Hamath also shall border thereby, Tyrus and Sidon, though it be very wise. So here he has given us a greater view of the area that is being dealt with here. And it says in Hamath, now called Hamath, also shall border thereby. So it also joins Hadrach by its borders. And then it mentions two other cities there. Tyrus is one of the cities and Zidon is the other. And Tyrus is in the Strong's, it's number 6865, and it means a stone. If you look it up in the Strong's, Tyrus means a stone, and Zidon is Zidon is 6721. Those two are very close in the Strong's, 6721 and 6865. And Zidon is a city in Asher. And it is evidently on the coast, and it's called a place of fish, or a fishery, if you will. And it is a coastal city of Phoenicia, and it's called Tyrus is the city of Phoenicia, and it's called a stronghold, or again a stone, and. And it said, though it be very wise. And here it was an area that had held hope for much wisdom. But again, if you go back and you pull a map out and you look at it and you realize that the hope help may have not have been the wisest thing of the whole thing yet. And it says in verse 3, because it says, and Tyrus did build herself a stronghold and heaped up silver as the dust and fine gold as the mire of the street. So you see here in these cities or towns of Phoenicia, which lay close to what we're talking about here, did build herself, or Tyrus established very much power in herself, and it was called a stronghold, or in today's vernacular in the United States, probably it would be something kind of like our Fort Knox up in Kentucky. It was a stronghold, or a place for holding wealth, and that's what Fort Knox was to the United States for a long time. It held the precious ore and the stuff where they backed up our money for a long period of time. So I think that's where the stronghold come in, that it was where the strong box was guarded. In that sense. And it said, and heaped up silver. Now, I like their rendition of heaping up silver as the dust. Or as, you know, we would pile dirt up. So, it gives you the idea that evidently, there were a lot of merchandise being put forth in these places. And they used it, and probably because they called it up there that it was what did we say? It was a place of wisdom, a hope of wisdom. The hope there was in making money, no doubt. And it says, and heaped up silver as the dust or dirt, as it, if it were a pile of dust. Now that would be, that'd be something to see. And also, talking about the fine gold that was there, as the mire or the mud hole, mud holes of the streets. And this is, would be considered very much wealth, I think. And it gives man a picture of that as we read it now, some 2,500 years almost down the road. We can go back and look at this and say, wait, that must have been some place for merchandise or some place that where man really put forth an effort to make himself wealthy. And no doubt that that happened. You remember when we went and talked about the king of Tyre. You know, the same type of situation. Yeah, so it goes back to the point that, you know, that if you had a coast and you had a place to where ships could dock in the Mediterranean there, that had to be a place where people went to and formulated their wealth rather than doing what God told Adam in Genesis 3. He said, you're going to eat by the sweat of your brow. That's, you know, you're going to work the ground. So this was not working the ground. It might have been working with the stuff that came out of the ground, but not working the ground. In verse 4, it says, behold, here's the word, oh, lo, look at this, or look and see. Behold, the Lord Jehovah will cast her out, and he will smite her power in the sea, and she shall be devoured with fire. So he said, wait a minute, let's look and see what Jehovah's going to do, what Adonai is going to do with Tyrus, and it says he's going to cast her out. And cast out there in the Strong's is 3423, and it's Narash, or it might be Yarash. I guess it's Yarash because it's going to be done by Jehovah, and it means to drive out and to seize or dispossess her. So this is what Jehovah is going to do with Tyrus. And it says that he will, or Adonai, will smite her, will strike and or be violent, as to beat, will smite her power in the sea or her authority to rule the seaways at that point. And so when we were reading, I believe it was 18 and 19 last Sunday.
Yeah, exactly what I was sitting there thinking about. Sounds a lot like the merchants of the ships standing there saying, what happened? You know, it's all gone now.
Yeah, you know? Well, this again is dealing with the end time and or times of the future. And it's going to happen. It's going to happen. And it says, and she shall be devoured with fire. And fire here is 398 in the Strong's and in the Hebrew. And that is the word alkal. And fire there is 784. And quite a lot of the fire, or all of the fire that you see, the number 784 and the Strong's, is fire from God. Now, if it's a different fire, or if it's man's fire, it will be 5135 in the Strong's, or 5216. But every time you look at it in the Strong's and it comes up 784, it is fire from God. Because that was when he established his fire, when he brought fire down to take care of the deal that he was making with Abram. It was on the altar, and the pieces were there. And fire from God came down. It wasn't man's fire. It was fire from God. And it said, and she shall be devoured with fire, or to be eaten up, if you will, with fire from God. So, you see, 9:3 and 9:4 deals with Tyrus and what's going to happen there. And their stronghold is not as strong as they think it is. Their wisdom was not toward God. Their wisdom was toward things that man loves to deal with. And that's the things of this earth, to see how much treasures they can lay up for themselves, rather than looking for that has been laid up for them by God. So there's a big difference there. And God can certainly take care. He can certainly take care of that in any way that he sees fit. And we get to verse 5. And verse 5 says, Ashkelon shall see it and fear. Gaza also shall see it and be very sorrowful. And Ekron, for her expectations, shall be ashamed. And the king shall perish from Gaza, and Ashkelon shall not be inhabited. And so I think not only that, but I think as we look and as we read, we're going to learn a little something here that we may have not have talked about very much, or maybe never. And I was thinking about this as I was doing the study, and I wanted to see what you think about it. Let's get into 5. It says Ashkelon. That's 831 in the Strong's, and it's a marketplace also. It is a place of trade and merchandise, just like Tyrus and Zidon is. And he said, Ascalon, a marketplace also, shall see it and fear. It is a Philistine city, and it is near the Gaza Strip. You still see them talk from time to time about the Gaza Strip in the neighborhood of where the children of Israel live. Okay, so it's a Philistine city, and you know, the Philistines always created great problems for the children of God. And it certainly could have been of their own making. But I got to thinking about this because of what's being said here. So let's just read the rest of the verse, and then we'll go back and talk about it in a minute. It says, Gaza also shall see it and be very sorrowful. Why? Well, I think the notes in the Companion Bible gives a pretty good indication of what it's going to, how sorrowful it's going to be. Because they're going to gaze, they're going to be amazed and dazed, and will peer and fear. Because they're seeing things that they know that they can't do anything about. The power that's being put forth on that part of the world in that day is going to be something that they know that they can't handle or take care of. Now, you remember when they got the Ark of the Covenant, when Phinehas and his brother took the Ark in the battle, because that was not what God had ever meant for it to be, and the Philistines got it away from them. And certainly, the Philistines paid a price, because whenever they touched it, a lot of them got killed, and the ones that didn't touch it got hemorrhoids anyway. So, you know, it was a situation. Well, let's look at the rest of this verse 5. In Ekron, you know what Ekron means in the Strong's? It's 6138, and it means eradication. You know, just like Cain and Abel. You know, Abel's name in the Hebrew, or the Chaldean, whatever it was Habal. And that meant temporary or short-lived. So God knew that Abel's life was going to be short-lived, even before it happened. So how do we think we could hide from God if he knows things in the future? Oh, my goodness. So Ekron, you know, means eradication. For her expectation shall be ashamed. Ekron is also a Philistine city. And the expectation there is Melbop. And it means hope to look to. So Ekron's expectation wasn't eradication, but it was something to look to and to hope for, just like Tyrus was. But that was not. It said, that expectation there shall be one of shame, to be pale or ashen, if you will. And it says, and the king shall perish from Gaza, So the king of Gaza, they're not going to have a sitting king anymore. And Ashkelon shall not be inhabited. And these two go together. So one of them's not going to have a sitting king. And the other one is not going to have people we're in for to see it. If you don't have a, if you don't have anybody there, there's no need for a king. Okay. We're talking about now. Let's just hold up for just a minute and talk about this. Genesis 6. When the fallen angels had their situations with the daughters of men, why did all these giants that come forth, why were all of them Philistines? Do you think that Satan had some kind of deal with the Philistine people? And this was another way that God was dealing with him here. And we know that he's going to deal with him again in the 18th, 19th chapter of Revelations. Now, was all of these... Now, think about it for a minute. Because all of these men of renown, all of these men of size and stature, they all had a situation with the Philistines. So was the outbreak, did that come from the people that lived in that area? Or was it a common thing? Was it all over? Or was this outbreak kind of situated in one place? Had you ever thought about that?
No, it would be a good, it would be an interesting study.
I think that's something that needs to be looked into.
Where the giants were sort of centered.
Yeah. Because it's evidently, it is pretty evident that most, a lot of them had a big deal in this particular part of the world. And if they were being held in the water and they got loose from the water, that these are the cities by the seashore. Oh. Well, I don't want to give you too much stuff to look into, but that might be something that you need to look at. Because,
go ahead.
I certainly don't have the answer to all this, but I just, it just struck me as I was doing the study. It struck me as well, we may not have really done much more than scratch the surface on this thing. Why were these fallen ones there? How did they get there? And if they're coming out of the water, if somehow or another Satan is allowing them to do these things and to try to taint the bloodline of all of the human race even further than what he did. And to realize that all this stuff, it seemed like it all kind of fits together a little bit now, beginning to, somewhat. Maybe we ought to look into that. Some be a good thing to do sometimes. So Ekron. In Ashkelon, God's going to leave them barren. He's going to leave one of them without a king, and the other, that town's going to be completely wiped out. Well, you know also, as I know, that the places that our Lord and Savior went to when he was here on the earth, when they would not listen to him or would not have him there, they're no longer in existence. Huh. Is that coincidence, or is it by design?
They're all descendants of Ham.
Yeah, okay.
Through Ham, through Cush, through Nimrod, he begat Babel, which is Babel.
Yeah.
And Erech and Akkad and Calneh in the land of Shinar. And listen to this. And Mizraim begat Ludum, Enamim, and Lehabim, and Naphtuhim, and Pethruzim, and Casluhim, out of whom came Philistine. The beginning of the Philistines.
Okay. So you see, I think there was a league there in cahoots with Satan that allowed these things to be. I'm not sure that all this outbreak of these giants were everywhere. I think they were kind of a part of it.
They were connected, certainly, because they were all sons of Ham.
Yeah.
And it's through Ham comes,
The all
Girgashites, the Amorites, everybody that God wanted to drive out of the land.
To get out of there, to kill them, to do whatever. Yeah. Okay.
That's a good point.
So, here we go. But verse 6 is what really got me here. I baited you on verse 5 because verse 6 says this. And a bastard shall dwell in Ashdod, and I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. What is a bastard? And a bastard shall dwell in Ashdod. That is a half-breed or a mongrel. It is neither angel and it's neither human. Half-breed. It wasn't what God meant to have. And so therefore will live and sit as king. And I will cut off or destroy or consume. That cut off there is 3772. And that's Kalrath. I will cut off the pride of the Philistines. One of those that have been made strong and great by size and stature and design. Gee. When I read that, I said, okay, I think we're on to something here. I don't know where you thought about it or not, but, you know, this is stuff that without just taking your time and looking at it, it's hard to get it down in your mind like it ought to be sometimes. And then verse 7 is quite a long verse of scripture, but let's read it. And it says, and I will take away his blood out of his mouth and his abominations from between his teeth. But he that remaineth, even he, shall be for our God, and he shall be as a governor in Judah, and Ekron as a Jebusite. So in verse 7 he says, and I will take away his blood out of his mouth. The one that he's talking about here is one that the blood he's talking about here is the blood that he offered for his sacrifice of which he ate. And his abominations from between his teeth. And I looked at this and I said, boy, if you think you can hide anything from God, if he's got scraps of meat from beneath, from between his teeth, God is even going to get that. Oh, how we think we can hide from God and do things. Because that is part of the sacrifice. It's the scraps from the sacrifice that lingers in his mouth between his teeth. Gee, you don't get anything past the Lord. And he that remaineth, means the remnant of the Philistines, even he shall be for our God Elohim. And he shall be as a governor in Judea and Ekron. Or he shall be or will become subject to our chieftain or our duke, saying that he's going to have to answer to God's man in Judah and in Ekron as a Jebusite or as a bondservant, if you will. This is 2983, and it means as a bondservant or and a descendant of Cana or Cain. So he's going to be there kind of as a figurehead for those Philistines that are left. But he's going to have to look toward God's man and God's people. And he's going to have to get rid of all this stuff that is abomination from God, even the things that are between his teeth. He can't have any of that left in him if he's going to be able to stay there and to be somewhat of a leader of those people in that Gaza area there. So, okay. Then we get down to Israel's defense here. And this deals with verse 8. This is a verse kind of by itself in 9:8. And Jehovah says, and I will encamp about mine house because of the army, because of him that passeth by, and because of him that returneth, and no oppressor shall pass through them any more. For now have I seen with mine eyes. So here, he says this, I will encamp about mine house, 1157. And that's Behag. Upon or up to or over against the temple, mine house, the temple. Why? Because of the army. He's keeping an eye on all things here. And he's keeping an eye on that man that's going to have to answer to his people and whoever's with him. He says, because of or against him that passes by or marches to and fro. And there's our word, because march and walk is the same situation. It marches to and fro. An army marches to and fro. You know, if you have an army, that's part of the regulatory system. Whenever they go in a formation. And when they're under the leadership of the people in charge, that's the way they generally go, to and fro. Because of him that returneth. See? And so that taskmaster here is no oppressor. Because he doesn't want anybody to be nagas or oppressors in his country at that time. That shall pass through or come unto my people anymore. Because he saw the problems beforehand of allowing people into Jerusalem, allowing people into Zion, and allowing them to interfere and to teach his people idolatry and the things that they were involved in. Because he says this, for now I've seen it with mine eyes. He says, it's not going to happen again like that. Because he says, I've seen it with mine eyes. And from this time until Christ comes is 400 years. And so he's keeping a pretty sharp eye out. He says, for now I have seen it with my own eyes. The affliction of my people, he says, I have seen with my own eyes. And that's the way I've set it up right now for that purpose. And I hate to get involved in the next verse because the next verse is going to take quite some time to get it done. So we're pretty close to our time. So let's stop with 8.
That is extremely prophetic.
Yeah, because we're going to have to go to Matthew 2. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to look at a lot of verses of scripture in Matthew and maybe some in Luke. To get the gist of what's going on here, because 9 gets to be a real thing, and we don't need to get it done too fast, because, you know, we need to look at Matthew 2 and then some in Matthew 21, because it talks about the one that's coming. He's going to be just. He's going to have salvation. He's going to be lowly. And at a point, he's going to come riding up on an ass. And we need to just to take a little time and get clued back into that again, because it's very important. Because now, this foretells the first coming of Messiah, recorded in the Gospels. And we just don't want to fluff over it. We want to kind of slow down and see and understand where our hope is, where it came from, and how it was promised to these people, and to realize what they ultimately did with it. And I don't think we need to be hurrying on that aspect, because if we've made 139 studies up to this point in the Old Testament, there's no point in wanting to hurry it up tonight. So we'll cut it off at the end of verse 8, and we'll pick up with verse 9, and we'll go over some of this next time. And we'll get as far as we can. And I'm not going to promise you that I get through the 9th chapter even in the next study, because it may be a little longer than that. But nevertheless, we'll do that because of the information there is so important. Not to these people only, but to us also. Because here he's talking about one that's coming with hope, and that he's one that's just, and to realize really what they did to him and to realize the outcome of that is the greatest gift that we could have ever gotten. Is the Son of God. So thank you for being with us tonight. And I'm not going to say that you have to agree with everything that I said, but in going over some of these things, I cannot help but to realize that there's things that I haven't really looked at to see and understand and talk about. And I'd read Genesis 6. I'd read it certainly about the giants. It talked about being before the flood and after that. But I'd never really considered. I thought maybe they were just out roaming around doing whatever they wanted to do because of their size and stature.
Well, even then, like today, most of the corruption, most of the ungodliness and all was centered in the cities more than in the outlying areas.
Yeah.
And because you had more interaction with people and
they
had more businesses and more leisure time and more time left their minds to get into the wrong thing.
They evidently had a good bit of money in that area.
Exactly. Lots of disposable income.
And a lot of that influence, too. Mm-hmm. By the seashore.
Yeah.
All of this stuff. Yep. Something to really think about. I may put a little note on that sometime and maybe go back and look at it in a little greater depth. Just for my own purpose, I would like to do that to see if I could make sense out of the Philistine influence there with the outbreak of the giants and where they came from. Doherty, you got something to think about here, huh?
Yeah. She's been putting up plenty of comments here.
thank you for being with us, and may God bless you. Continue to remember us in prayer and that we do God's bidding here at this place and really get involved with things that need to be taken care of, I think, now. So thank you for your love, and thank you most of all for your prayers. And thank you for the opportunity to be able to have this media to express these things that I find that it gives me an outlet to share them with others. Like I say, you don't have to agree, but just give it some thought. Love y'all. God bless you. Thank you.